Let me say from the beginning, I feel very inadequate trying to discuss some of these complicated words, grace and peace and mercy. Are these words that are seemingly might be easy to define, but as we get into a biblical scriptural definition, you find out very quickly that they're not. So I'll do my best to give a little bit of an overview so that we can at least have some understanding, and I'll tell you why I think it's so important as we get to the end of our lesson. So let's begin with grace. Now, grace is a very misunderstood word. It's a word that's misunderstood in the religious realm, and people talk about being saved by grace, and they have an idea of what that means. And unfortunately, I'm afraid a lot of their ideas are not found in the scriptures. It's become very common, though, to claim saved by grace, and that has a meaning with it. We also use the word grace just in our normal language, and it doesn't mean the same thing. You know, we talk about a person who runs gracefully or who acts gracefully. Well, that's not the biblical definition. I remember there was a TV show one time that was talking about Jackie Kennedy. And I said, well, there was a lady that was full of grace, and you either have grace or you don't have grace. Well, that's not the biblical definition of the word grace, of what we think about when we use it in our language, most likely. So what then is the biblical definition of grace? I'm going to go to two different sources, and we'll do the same thing on all three. So all three words, but we'll start with Strong's, and then we're going to jump to Vines. Strong's Concordance tells us that the word grace, when used in the scriptures, come from a Greek word, C-H-A-R-I-S. And it's number 5485 if you're a fan of Strong's Concordance, if you want to look it up. The meaning from that word is that it's a favor, it's a benefit, it's a gift. It's something that is given from one person to another. It's a very compassionate type person. And the idea of that favor is that it's not something that is earned. It is not something that is deserved. It is not something that they should receive or we should feel entitled to, but it's something that someone gives us. I was looking in the song book here just a second ago. There's a song in the back, number 740. It's called He Paid a Debt He Did Not Owe. And I think this has a pretty good idea of the understanding of grace. Page 740, it says, He paid a debt he did not owe. I owed a debt I could not pay. I needed someone to wash my sins away, and now I can sing a brand new song, Amazing Grace. All day long, Christ Jesus paid the debt that I could never pay. So I think that has a pretty good understanding of Jesus paid the debt that he did not owe to pay a debt that we could never pay. It's the idea of grace. It's something that is a gift. It is a benefit. From Vine's dictionary, Vine says it involves loving kindness, goodwill, friendly disposition, and in fact, it's very likened to the word Godspeed that the Greeks would like to use in their time, that they would wish someone Godspeed, and occasionally we still hear that in our language today. But it's the same idea of doing something nice, doing something that has kindness and with lovingness, with a pure heart, and it's something that a person does not deserve. So, here we go. I'm going to give you an idea here, just a working definition. Grace is unmerited favor. It's something that we don't deserve. It's something that cannot be earned, and it is a gift. And it is something that God does not have to give us, but it is something that he has chosen to. So when we sing that song, Amazing Grace, we need to really think about what we're singing. That God gave extended grace to us. He gave us a gift that we did not deserve. He gave us something that was unmerited. It was unwarranted. And what a wonderful, wonderful idea that is. So that's the idea of grace. And now what about peace? Told you, I'm just going to skim the surface. If you get into it too deep, we'll really confuse ourselves. What about peace? What is peace? Well, from the Strong's Concordance again, it comes from a Greek word. I'd pronounce it Irene. I don't know if that's how you say it or not. E-I-R-E-N-E. And it's Strong's number 1515. And so the word peace means prosperity. It means quietness. It means rest. It's a very calm setting. And you may be wondering, what does grace have to do with peace? Well, by the time we finish our lesson, hopefully you'll see how these two words connect. So it's a very easy time. It's a time of when everything is going our way, when there's not a lot of conflict. From Vine's dictionary, Vine says peace, it could be a harmonious relationship with men, that we're able to get along with people, that we don't have a lot of conflict, whether in the workplace or in the home or with our neighbors, we're able to just live in harmony and to live with other men in harmony here upon this earth. Vine's also mentioned it's a harmonious relationship between God and man, that many times God is even referred to as the God of peace. And that phrase, that term, the God of peace, has to do with this relationship between God and man, and the gospel has allowed that relationship. So for a working definition for peace, peace is a friendly state of being. It's where things are going well, where people are doing well, where things are in a good situation, where there's a lack of conflict. There's no conflict involved. There's no difficulties. We're able to live in peace. It's the absence of conflict. So there's grace and there's peace. We've got one more word to talk about now, and that is mercy. And mercy is going to be very, very related to peace. Strong's Concordance, again, he gives it from the Greek word eleos, Strong's number 1656. And according to Strong's, it's the meaning of compassion. It's tenderness. It's a feeling of sympathy. Maybe even deeper than that, it's a feeling of empathy. That when we see someone struggling, when we see someone in a difficult time, we have mercy upon them, whether it's warranted or not. Megan reminded me of the example that Paul Collins gave about the mother who was pleading with the judge for mercy upon her son, who was a criminal. And the judge said, well, he doesn't deserve it. To which their mother replied, well, if he deserved it, it wouldn't be mercy. And so that's the idea, that mercy is something that's completely undeserved. We have no right to it. But it's when one person feels a sense of compassion or tenderness or empathy towards a person who was in distress. And not only do we feel bad about it, we try to do something about it. It's a word that involves action. And you even get into some of these studies, it talks about passive mercy and active mercy, that it's to be something active. It's not just to say, well, I feel sorry for someone, I'm going to have mercy upon them. It is to actually do something to act upon that mercy. Vine's dictionary talks about mercy being an outward manifestation of pity. It's something outward that we do. We feel sorry, we have, our heart aches for them, and so we attempt to do something to offer them mercy. It assumes need on the part of the one who receives it and adequate resources on the part of the giver. And so when we talk about God being a merciful God, then that talks about that we need mercy and that God has the ability to provide for us. So a working definition of mercy. Mercy is to feel sympathy with the misery of another and to act upon those feelings. It is to do something when we realize someone is in a bad situation. So we have grace, we have peace, and we have mercy. And these three words go together oftentimes. And so you may be wondering, well, I don't really see where this lesson is going. Well, I've been doing some study. I've been doing some thinking about some things. A lot of these words go together. Okay, so I want you to think about this. I'm going to kind of partner them up. Grace and mercy go together. From Vines, he says grace describes God's attitude toward the lawbreaker. Mercy is his attitude towards those in distress. And so just because we have someone who blatantly breaks the law, they are still offered grace. Lawbreakers are offered grace, but they may not be offered mercy, because they are doing it in blatant disregard of God's word. Mercy is his attitude. Mercy is God's empathy for those who are in bad situations. But if it's someone who is a lawbreaker, they're still entitled, amazing as it sounds, they're still entitled to God's grace. It's crazy. What about grace and mercy again? Vine says grace must go before mercy in terms of salvation. Meaning, if you don't have grace, if you don't have a loving spirit, then the idea of mercy won't come into me. So it has to start with grace. And in fact, as we start looking at these passages, when grace and mercy are put together in the Scriptures, I believe every time the word grace comes first. It is grace and then mercy that is mentioned, and it seems to be for a reason. What about mercy and peace? Again, Vine says mercy is the act of God. Peace is the resulting experience in the heart of man. If we want to know peace, then we need to act upon the mercy of God. God extends His mercy, and we can do with it whatever we please. We can ignore His mercy, or we can act upon it. And if we do what we're supposed to, and we act upon the mercy and the grace of God, then for the first time, we can actually feel peace. So mercy and peace go together. Have you ever noticed how often the Bible talks about grace, mercy, and peace? Or sometimes it's just grace and peace. Have you ever noticed that? And I'll be honest, I hadn't until I've gotten to study a little bit. Here's grace and peace. I want you to think about this. This was used as a salutation in the beginning, usually in the first couple verses of the book. So I'll turn to the first one just to kind of give you an idea of what it sounds like. In Romans, the first chapter, and in verse 7, Paul says, "Grace to you and peace from God our Father and the Lord Jesus Christ." And so Paul says, grace and peace. Same thing happens in 1 Corinthians, 2 Corinthians, Galatians, Ephesians, Philippians, Colossians, 1 Thessalonians, 2 Thessalonians, Philemon, 1 Peter, and 2 Peter. Now, we've talked about in the past, if something happens once, that might just be a fluke. If something happens twice, it might be a coincidence. When something happens three times, it's usually for a purpose. But what happens if it happens 12 times? Nearly every epistle in the New Testament begins with the salutation of the writer is talking to the Christian saying, I hope you have grace and peace. Grace and peace to you from God. Let's go a little bit further. Let's add mercy into the mix. Grace, mercy, and peace is used as a salutation in 1 Timothy, 2 Timothy, Titus, 2 John, and Jude. All use that word. So if we go back and look, which one are we missing? There's not many. In fact, I didn't even put one on here. It's Revelation. It's grace and peace as well. I believe the only books that don't mention it are 3 John, 1 John, Hebrews, and James. And they all have some sort of talk about grace, mercy, and peace, but not necessarily as a salutation. So I got thinking about that and said, why is that? Why is that? Is that every book of the New Testament that the writers deemed it important enough to go in and talk about grace and mercy and peace? Why is that such a big deal? And I kind of finally dawned on me is that's really what separates Christians from everybody else. And if we don't understand grace and mercy and peace, we're going to have an awfully hard time of fulfilling God's commands. We're going to have an awfully hard time of doing what we're supposed to do, because a lot of the commands that we find in the New Testament will make zero sense if we don't look through the paradigm of grace and mercy and peace. Let me give you an example of this. Because I asked the question, do you think that was just something in the New Testament writers used in a flippant manner? Do you think it was something they just, every time they wrote a letter, kind of like we, I don't guess you write letters anymore, now you just text or email, but back in the old days you would say, my dearest so-and-so, and then at the end you would say sincerely or yours truly. Are those just words that these writers were using just as part of their form of writing? Or was it something more powerful to that? And I think there was a much greater purpose. If nearly every New Testament epistle ended or began in this way, there's got to be something to it. Why were they so intent upon talking about grace and peace and mercy to the early church? I believe there's a constant reminder for Christians to focus on grace, peace, and mercy. And I think it was by design. I don't think it's a fluke. I don't think it's something that just happened. There is something important about these words. And as I think about it, when folks come into our midst, when preachers come and visit, have you ever heard a preacher wish our congregation more grace? Have you ever heard a preacher say to the congregation, to these faithful Christians, I hope you have grace and peace and mercy? I don't know that I've ever heard anybody say that. But that sure was the message in the first century from Paul and from Peter and from John. They all focused on grace, peace, and mercy. So there's bound to be something important to it. How much the controversy in the religious world could be avoided if people would just live under the concepts of grace and peace and mercy. But unfortunately, we don't. We like to live under human thinking. And in doing so, it really messes us up. So let me give you an example here of human nature. So maybe Sonora can understand this one, or maybe Sarah can understand it more than Sonora. One of the first words that a child learns is mine. And we go through a mine stage, and everything is mine, mine. It's my toy. That's my shirt, my shoes, my whatever. Even if it's not theirs, the child will claim that it's theirs. They go through the mind stage because that's human nature. We don't like to think about others. We like to think about number one. And it is from a very early age we talk about mine. Well, after a little while, that child starts to grow a little bit. And if they've got siblings, it happens a whole lot faster. But if they start getting around other kids and neighbors and cousins and going to school, then they have to learn how to share. And some kids do okay with that, and some do not. Some don't like to share at all. They don't like to share toys. They don't like to share time. They don't like to share bicycles, anything, because it's mine. It is mine. See, that's not thinking of others. That's not thinking with an idea of grace and mercy and peace. We like conflict, a lot of times. And we seek conflict out. These kids do. And hopefully we grow out of that. So we go from this mine and the sharing idea very, very quickly to the concept of fairness. And so we say, as children, well, that's not fair. And if you get to do something, then I get to do something. And that's only fair. And we've probably all seen kids. There are some kids that when they learn the concept of fairness, they will do something that they don't want to do just so someone else who wants to do it can't do it. You may have to think about all of that. But we have that situation where it's only fair. Well, if my brother gets to watch TV for 30 minutes, then I get to watch TV for 30 minutes because that's fair. And so we'll go in and we'll kick the brother off of the TV. They won't even watch it. They have no desire to watch TV. They just do it because that's fair. Because we think about ourselves. That's what human nature does. We think about ourselves. We put the spotlight on us. It's what's good for me. And if it's fair, then I want it. Well, even if I don't want it, I still want it because that's fair and that's what's coming to me and that's entitlement. And that's how human nature works. And then we start getting a little older. And let me ask you, how do our actions start being as we get older? And think about our relationships in our families and in our marriages and at our places of employment with neighbors. What is the normal way of thinking for adults? Do we base things on grace and peace and mercy? Yeah, probably not. Probably not. Usually we base things upon anger. And we get mad at somebody, so we're going to take it out on them. And we'll do whatever we can because we're mad at somebody. Or maybe anger turns into retaliation. And so we're going to do stuff. They threw something over our fence. Well, I'm going to throw something over their fence. And that's how we think. We think in terms of retaliation. Jealousy. That's human nature. We don't think about doing something for someone else. Instead, we think about what could someone do for us? Because we get jealous. And we don't want anybody getting something that we don't get. Kind of the adult version of that's not fair. We get jealous over things. How we get greedy. We think about our own place and how we can make more money and how we could have that better job and how we could have that bigger and faster car. And we do things, maybe instead of by a Christian nature, we get caught up in some of these concepts and these ideas. And what do the epistles say? Nearly every one of them. He goes, you better learn about grace and peace and mercy. Because if we'll focus on grace and peace and mercy, we'll treat people differently. And we'll treat situations differently. And you know what? Maybe we will get beat occasionally on $10. You know, instead of causing a big ruckus about it and disturbing the peace, there may be times that we're going to get beat on $10. And 50 years from now, nobody's going to remember that. But we're going to lose sometimes. And sometimes we're going to have to do things that aren't fair. We're going to have to pay more than what we should. We're going to have to do more than what we should. But that's okay. That's okay. Instead of being angry and upset and jealous and greedy, because that's what human nature is all about. Human nature is about evil desires. And how many decisions are made because of evil things that we have in our mind. As Christians, we've got to get rid of that. And so we talk about the old man being gone and the new man coming in. It is against human nature to live in terms of grace and peace and mercy. Grace, again, meaning to give of something. To give of something. That unmerited favor, whether they deserve it or not, we're willing to give. Peace, meaning to maintain a peaceful existence without conflict. Instead of going out looking for conflict when somebody turns their music up too loud next door to us. You know, we may have the right to do this, do such a thing, but sometimes it's about maintaining the peace. Mercy, the idea of being willing to give and being willing to let actions take when we feel empathy for someone. Humankind doesn't think of that. Humankind looks for opportunities to better themselves. And we look for, when we got a man down, we kick him and we take what he's got. That's what humankind looks for, because that way we can raise ourselves up and we can make more money and we can have a better house and we can have a better life. And you see the difference? Christians have to learn to act against human nature. And we have to learn to act with grace, peace, and mercy. We must be reminded of it constantly, because it's not within our nature. It's not human nature to do that. Human nature takes you to the path of Sodom and Gomorrah. That's what human nature does. Human nature takes you to the time of Noah, when the Bible says there wasn't anybody left that was righteous. That's what human nature does. We have to learn and we have to train ourselves to live a different way. And we have to focus on grace and peace and mercy. And I think the New Testament writers understood that. And so that's why when you pick up a book of the Bible, go to the New Testament, go to any of the epistles, the first thing they would hear when it was read in their presence would be, grace and peace unto you. Or grace, peace, and mercy unto you. It was a constant reminder of how they were to live. But in conclusion, I want to show you this passage from Matthew chapter 5. From the Sermon on the Mount, which makes absolutely zero sense in human nature. It makes no sense if you read it, if we don't look at it through the paradigm of grace, peace, and mercy. Now, when you consider that background, it makes sense. Can you imagine these people that listen to Jesus and he says, you've heard that it was said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But I tell you not to resist an evil person. But whoever slaps you on your right cheek, turn the other to him also. What? Dude, that doesn't even make sense in human nature. If somebody slaps us, we're supposed to turn and let him slap the other side? It doesn't even make sense. But in the idea of grace, peace, and mercy, it does. He says, if anyone wants to sue you and take away your tunic, let him have your cloak also. And whoever compels you to go 1 mile, go with him too. Give to him who asks you, and from him who wants to borrow from you, do not turn away. You have heard that it was said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I say to you, love your enemies, bless those who curse you, do good to those who hate you, and pray for those who spitefully use you and persecute you, that you may be sons of your Father in heaven. And see, that passage makes zero sense to most people in the world, because they're thinking in terms of human nature. But if we can learn to convert that into thinking in terms of grace and peace and mercy, you start going, oh, I understand. We're supposed to do stuff sometimes that we're not asked. And he forces us to walk 1 mile. We'll go ahead and walk 2. That, because we can be merciful. Maybe we have pity on the person that he's in the situation that he is. Man sues us and wants our coat. I tell you what, you can have both of my coats. See, it doesn't make sense until you look at it in the idea of grace and peace and mercy. Because sometimes you got to do things to keep the peace that just flat out don't make sense. So in conclusion, difficult concepts like this one, and there's many other in the scriptures, I'm just trying to build kind of a foundation for some things that I want to talk about in the future. They only make sense when viewed through the paradigm of grace, peace, and mercy. And I think the writers understood that. And that is why nearly every epistle in the New Testament begins with an admonition and a prayer and a hope that the congregation would be full of grace and peace, or grace, peace, and mercy. So, kind of an interesting little study. So.